You're listening to the Unlocking Africa podcast.
The real mission of Close the Gap is to give access to people from underprivileged environments to the digital economy. We upcycle on a yearly basis around 50,000 computers. Mombasa was as a second city of Kenya with over 1 million inhabitants, that it was the left behind region when we are talking about technology. Secondary cities, I would think when it gets to hotspots and hubs and tech hubs, might often be forgotten. You will see that Africans will buy more locally assembled products. I think that will be an amazing next 5 years for Africa.
Stay tuned as we bring you inspiring people who are unlocking Africa's economic potential. You're listening to the Unlocking Africa podcast with your host, Tessa Adamu.
Welcome to the Unlocking Africa podcast, where we find inspirational people who are doing inspirational things to unlock Africa's economic potential. Today, we have a very special guest, Olivier van den Ende, who is founding partner and executive director at Close the Gap Kenya, which is a circular economy hub in Mombasa. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the podcast, Olivier. How are you?
Hi, Tercer. Good afternoon. I'm very good. And yourself?
I'm good. I know we've been planning this conversation for a little while, so it's great that it's finally arrived.
Thank you. Likewise, I'm here in Mombasa today, and it's a gorgeous day. Tropical temperatures, but excited to get in this conversation with you and your listeners.
I wish I could say the same about the weather in the UK, but I'm jealous. I'm not sure if you've listened to the podcast before, but I usually like to start from the beginning. So I was hoping before we get into the conversation, you can introduce yourself and tell us a bit more about Olivier van den Ende.
So I'm born and raised in Belgium. I'm 42 years old, and I started Close the Gap as a student venture at my university at the age of 21, 22. So it's close to 20 years ago that I founded Close the Gap as a social enterprise. At first, obviously, at university in a very gradual and granular way. Besides being an entrepreneur, a social entrepreneur, I'm also the oldest of six kids at home. My four brothers and one sister, so five siblings. Oh. And I married to Debbie, and we moved to Kenya almost 3.5 years ago with our, at that time, only child, Alexander, who was three, who is now close to seven. And we have a newborn baby of 6 months as well.
So congratulations.
Thank you. So yeah, that's a bit about myself. I'm always been passionate about technology. I had lots of luck, I would say, in my early teenage years to be exposed to technology already when it was still quite a bit of a luxury good. Also in my country, in Belgium, where it was not very common for students or young aspirational entrepreneurs to have access to it. And in a certain way, growing up with this privilege of having had access to it in the 90s, when I was kind of like around 10, 11 years old, and being able also to, at that time already, redeploy computers from the business of my dad for my younger brothers and sister. The idea of Close the Gap originated actually from the household experience when I started doing that at home with support of my godfather, who was into technology coming from the US at that time.
Wonderful, wonderful. So you've given us great insights into who you are and your professional path into the world of tech. As we mentioned in the intro, you are the founding partner and executive director at Close the Gap Kenya. Can you tell us what Close the Gap does, why you started it, and I guess what you hope to achieve?
So Close the Gap Kenya is actually somehow it's an extension of what I started from Central Europe 20 years ago. It was a personal challenge and also an aspiration, saying to myself, after having worked from Europe each time with traveling to Africa and supporting entrepreneurs here on the continent that I really wanted to do it from within the continent and actually being together with African peers, together with entrepreneurs on the ground, facing their day-to-day environments, livelihoods, challenges, and opportunities. And Close the Gap Kenya, as such, was created here in Kenya as a new startup, as a private company with support from an investor from overseas in Europe. And the real mission of Close the Gap is to give access to people from underprivileged environments to the digital economy, to digital inclusion, to digital entrepreneurship. And all of this basically with the idea of using technology as an instrument to become self-reliable, to become less dependent of aid mechanisms, of welfare programs, and actually also as a way of poverty alleviation. And so the real mission of Close the Gap is about digital inclusion, but to do that in a business way without ourselves being a subsidized organization, so with some revenue engines behind our service offerings. And there is two big, I would say, business models at Close the Gap Kenya. So one of them is that we operate an IT assembly and upcycling facility, kind of an IT factory in the port of Mombasa, where we upcycle on a yearly basis around 50,000 computers, being laptops, tablets, smartphones, and also some desktops. And then actually make them available at affordable prices and in a kind of a made in Kenya device to our local customers who are mostly aspiring entrepreneurs, startups, but also school children, university children, healthcare facilities. So that's part one. And part two is that we also operate a tech hub as an incubator in the city center of Mombasa. And that's actually a kind of a one-stop shop housed in a 1,500 square meter shopping center, so to say, an old shopping center, one of the oldest one in Kenya and in Mombasa for sure, that was ready for renovation. And we kind of renovated its ground floor Arabic style building here in Mombasa. And it now houses co-working space, private offices, communal offices, an atrium, a cafe, a gym. And all of that actually to give entrepreneurs a one-stop shop to training, access to seed capital, also access to a maker space where they can prototype equipment using all kinds of technological tools such as 3D printers, crafting material, laser cutters, CNC machines. So those are the two big activities we run here.
Fantastic, fantastic. So you've detailed your work and operations in Mombasa, Kenya. Why did you choose to base yourself in Mombasa and not, say, Nairobi?
You want the emotional answer to that or the rational one?
Both.
Okay. I will start with the more personal, emotional side of it. I told you I'm 42. I've been working for 20 plus years now. And then when you move to another place, you like to be somehow also in a place that you can quickly call home.
Yes.
And so I was coming from the capital of Europe, always used to live in places like Brussels, Amsterdam, and working in big cities across Europe. So I thought this time it's time to really go to a coastal area and live in an ecosystem which is completely different. And then Mombasa is really about tropical. It's a tropical on the equator kind of based area where you are literally overwhelmed by the Indian Ocean, by the hot and also the humid atmosphere. And all of that kind of was attracting me a lot. That's the kind of the personal emotional answer to the question. But the real rational one is really that we've felt from our background and from the many encounters I've had in the last, let's say, 20 years with many African partners across sub-Saharan Africa, that Mombasa was, as a second city of Kenya with over 1 million inhabitants, that it was kind of a left behind region when we are talking about technology, when we're talking about entrepreneurship, or when we're talking about tech as a tool to enterprise. And Nairobi is what we call here the Silicon Savannah of East Africa. And the challenge I wanted to onboard on was really saying, let's prove that a big area with over 1 million people, with so many ecological, economical, livelihood challenges, could really even benefit incrementally more from the type of social enterprise we were going to set up, as if we would be kind of number 25 in a row being in Nairobi next to so many others already somehow doing things that we are also doing and probably doing those things perhaps in certain ways even much better than we could do it because they're much more trained and long in that type of business. But we said, let's go to a place where there's really room for improvement, also time to learn and more opportunities for us to do some trial and error and to get really a full and a very big base of support by the local community here because of the fact that we were doing something that they were not expecting.
That's extremely interesting. Do you think in Africa we sometimes ignore or forget about the strategic importance of, say, secondary cities such as Mombasa?
Oh, I think it's a good question. I would think so. From an international study from one of the top universities in the US, I believe a couple of years ago already, it was saying that coastal cities were amongst the most innovative ones around the globe when you looked at a setup of startups, ecosystems, talent bases for brain ports across the globe. And In that sense, Mombasa obviously would have been the obvious choice to become this ecosystem in Kenya, but Nairobi most definitely very thoroughly and with lots of success and appreciation became that hotspot in East Africa. So secondary cities, I would think, are typically, when it gets to hotspots and hubs and tech hubs, might often be forgotten or at least not get as much attention that they could or would deserve because of often also corporates having their HQs in those first cities. So I would think that secondary cities deserve really more attention for this type of setups and that the benefits you get out of it are extremely valuable because you often get much more support from the base, from the communities at large, from schools, from governments, from local governments, from entrepreneurs. And you kind of get also the factor of appreciation because people don't really expect this type of developments happening. Definitely in emerging countries where often the capital cities are still also in a growth phase of those developments. And then definitely a tier two city would not directly generate lots of attention for those developments.
Interesting, interesting. Thank you for sharing that. You've detailed the importance and the potential secondary cities in Africa can have and the impact in terms of connecting with the community and the private and public sector. So within what you do in terms of Close the Gap Kenya, would you describe it as a circular economy hub?
Yeah, that's kind of the name we have given to our spaces here. It's basically really related to the fact that our revenue engine also in Europe, in our business in Belgium, because we also operate from Belgium and the Netherlands, a similar ecosystem. The revenue engine is really the fact that we are an IT circular economy company. And that we are kind of the market leader in upcycling computer devices, giving them a second lease of life, mostly looking at the entire supply chain when it gets to the proper use of a device, the reuse of that same device, and then eventually the recycling up to the downcycling of the device into precious metals, so to say, and tearing down the hazardous and the complex fractions into safe downcycling back to materials that can be reused and, let's say, in new production processes, so that it's really an urban mining type of activity.
So for people out there who don't quite understand or know what a circular economy is, can you explain what a circular economy hub is and why you felt it is needed in Africa or in Mombasa?
For me, a circular economy hub is a hub where, on the one hand, you walk the talk. Definitely, you try to be circular yourself in terms of walking the talk, using yourself as much as possible, products that are designed to last longer, products that are made in such a way that you can repair them, reuse them. Obviously, next to that, it's also about being efficient with resources, being an energy-friendly, well-isolated building, certainly when you use AC in this part of the world. But thirdly, it's also for me a place where circular ideas can be designed, challenged, assessed, and made into a minimal viable product. And that's really, I think, what makes our hub quite unique is that we have all those aspects together, and that young entrepreneurs can come up with any idea that has a circularity in its design, whether it's a product, whether it's a service, whether it has something to do with clean energy or with technology, with education, even with medical solutions. They can all come with their ideas, work it out from a kind of an innovation challenge perspective or a hackathon, and come to really like the most efficient way of setting up a minimal viable product and getting all the coaching around it, the prototyping, up to the fact that they can really set it up as a business.
Fantastic, fantastic. So you touched on a few key points there. And one that you touched on then and earlier on is you have a focus on specifically tech for development. So I was wondering if you could explain some of the ways that you are using tech for development.
Yeah, so tech for development. They also call it D4D or like digital for development.
Yes.
Another name that sometimes used also by development finance institutions, for instance. And exactly what the terminology is saying, it's actually using technology for making a better world. And it can go really on many angles. I'll just give you one example of, for instance, EdTech development, a young team of entrepreneurs that is aware, certainly in emerging countries, in developing countries, in countries with a relatively large youthful population and people with often few financial means, often also rural habitats. There is so many bursaries available in the world for all type of trainings, educations, for funding, often from a service club, from a local village somewhere in the world, up to United Nations grants, to big corporate grants, and so on and so forth. So EdTech for Development company would be one, for instance, that makes a kind of a Tinder app, so to say, but then where you bring together the providers of bursaries, of funding programs for education for youth, and then just like Tinder is matching profiles from a love affair point of view, they are matching them from an educational and a funding point of view. And there is a business model behind it to bring scholarships and grant-giving organizations together with potential candidates, depending of their passion, their areas of interest, and also their level of motivation. So that's one example of a tech for development venture. But another one is, for instance, here in the coast, like in many other African countries, many women would wear wigs. Many of those wigs, certainly in underserved areas, are often made from plastics, relatively cheap products, and after they are used for a couple of weeks and they are getting dirty, they are landfilled. There is not really something you can do with such a wig. And so there was a girl here that grew up in an area where she saw this problem and also the opportunity of using them as a girl herself. So she created a kind of a circular model to actually get a kind of a collection scheme in place. And then with an incentive program for healthcare practitioners, small spas and barbershops to kind of collect them. And then she kind of grinds them into small particles that she can reuse in a technical procedure to make like doormats. Doormats that are typically used here in the coast where there's lots of dust, lots of rain, dryness. So this is another example of how you can kind of clean up the landfills, get plastics out of the ocean, and at the same time have a new product you develop that is bankable, sellable, and needed. And those are the type of circular examples that are designed and founded in our hub by our young aspiring entrepreneurs.
Brilliant. So you've given great examples of tech for development, such as recycling of plastics to develop new products. With regards to what you do through the hub you focus on, you mentioned earlier refurbishing and recycling laptops and computers. So how did this concept or idea come about? Is it an idea you had whilst you were still living in Europe that you brought over to Africa? And also, I was just wondering, how successful has it been so far?
the idea of Close the Gap, reusing computer technology from large end-user organizations, that was an idea that came like almost 20 years ago. And that's obviously not a rocket science idea today, but it's kind of our bread and butter and our core business since many years. The idea of setting up the hub in Kenya as a circular economy hub with all the programs around it, that idea, I would say, originated really from a job readiness perspective. It really came from a deep reflection on the why question. Why do you why are we in the space in which we are in specifically sub-Saharan Africa? And very specifically, then the idea came to see whether we could add in an ecosystem like Mombasa, where there is this huge Indian Ocean, hundreds of kilometers of ocean bordering with the country between Tanzania and Somalia, where plastics are a big thing, where there is lots of rural areas where you cannot easily come with new solutions because of the distance and of the aspect of being expensive of traveling. So we very specifically were looking at circular economy and job creation, really yes. being on the border of those two. And so the idea originated on that level. Whether it was successful, I would say, Tarsir, the jury is out there. We have had like over 100 startups that originated out of our incubator so far. So 100 ideas that somehow came to fruition with each time a team of founders, a team of people that kind of assessed their idea with some stakeholder involvement and stakeholder dialogue. Of those 100, I would say 20 out of them in the last 2.5 years have been incubated and have been considered what we call investor ready.
Brilliant.
And those have received some seed capital funding. So typically, we would grant seed capitals between 5,000 and 35,000, 40,000 euros of seed capital per startup. And 20 out of them have gotten or are in the process of getting this seed capital. So I think it has been fairly successful. I definitely see lots of rooms for improvement and challenges, and the livelihoods for entrepreneurs are definitely not ideal here. There is often what we call the effect of hassling. Yeah? So an entrepreneur cannot 200% put his or her time in his or her venture because they don't get enough money out of it to survive. They have many, many obligations often to their families. And you see that their focus is not constantly on the business. And obviously that comes also with the country or a community where obviously poverty is still very much present.
Wonderful, wonderful. So you mentioned that you've incubated around 100 entrepreneurs and 20 have reached the stage of being investor ready. So I'm assuming for a concept like this to work, you have to often leverage on your partnerships and vast networks. So what type of partnerships and networks or collaboration is required for a project like this to work?
I think that's a spot on question. The reason we've been relatively and fairly successful here is because we set up our program here as a triple P, so a public-private partnership.
Yes. So
that's directly coming to the essence of your question. So it's about setting up partnerships with both the public and the private sector and doing it in a way that it is scalable. So the partnerships we've set up was here in Kenya, for instance, also with the federal employment organization. It's called NITA here, National Industrial Training Authority. So they have in every county physical presence. They have accredited courses for professional training, and they also give kind of earmarks and stamps to partners such as us that would use curriculum or create curriculum so that obviously what you train your startups to train that's also recognized by government, and so that when they have their successful training in their pocket, that obviously it adds value also to them and that they can bank on it by going to a Kenyan company afterwards and claim, I did this training and it is a certified training in the country where I got it. And I think that's already part one of the answer. You need to work with local partners. don't start giving curriculum that comes from any other country where you happen to have a good relationship with and where you know it's good curriculum. It needs to be localized. It needs to be made customized for the local needs, for the local demands. A second one is obviously also working with society at large. So we work here in Mombasa with an organization called Swahili Pots. It's the largest community center. They're also an innovation generating community user where they use arts and music, but also technology as a kind of an attraction pool to get youth after school activities and an alternative for people that are not in school anymore to do something valuable, learn about their skills, be in a conducive environment where they can learn from each other, be motivated, be in a safe environment, have access to free and quality internet. So we team up with this type of organizations. And thirdly, obviously, also working together with international organizations and with governments. And I think those four type of stakeholders together in a social enterprise that basically runs the show and really makes sure that everyone is playing its or her role in the most efficient way with continuity, with good governance. That's, I think, the recipe for success.
Brilliant, brilliant. So you've detailed the partnerships and some of the collaborations that you have entered to ensure that the project is successful. And also something that's key, the importance of working with local partners to create local content. So Close the Gap Kenya supports young local entrepreneurs. I was wondering if you could take us through some of the activities and trainings that is carried out to, I guess, build the capacity and capability of those young entrepreneurs.
So basically, if you would come on a random day in our hub, you would see we have a big atrium. Between 50 and 100 people can comfortably mingle together. We have a pitch arena with a podium. So people would be learned and trained to exercise in groups on soft skills, how to engage with investors, how to engage with customers, how to engage with governments, with quality assurance. We would have trainers that would learn them how to speak in public. So that's one type of activity. That's what we call Boost Your Learning, BYL. Then we also have Boost Your Business. That would be typically learning them how to pitch, how to make a good pitching document where they can kind of make a slide deck explaining what their service is, why they are providing a certain solution to the market, whether it's a product or a service, how that product or service works, what it will cost, what competition looks like. So that is what we call our Boost Your Business, BYB track. And then we have a third track, and that's the BYT, Boost Your Tech. And that's in our makerspace. And there you would typically see young people like designing, crafting products, using CNC machines, using 3D printers, working with robotics, with drones, like all type of technology we make available in that makerspace. So those would be the three type of activities you would really see happening if you would just bump in on the spot. So you would see people drafting and crafting and making things and designing and using all kind of tech-supported tools. You would see them also in a classroom, but mostly lively and moving around and doing group exercises. And then also really like business modeling, that would be more coaching, one-on-one, peer-to-peer mentoring, and also live pitches. So we would have investors, VCs that would typically come on a call and they would engage with some of the startups. If things go well, even grant them seed capital.
Wonderful, wonderful. So you've detailed some of the great work that you do, such as supporting entrepreneurs with creating things such as slide decks, presenting and pitching to investors, and developing and designing products. So once you've supported these entrepreneurs and startups, what happens to them? Do they venture off on their own, or is there continued support once, I guess, the support within the hub has completed?
In a kind of a fund where we have a project manager who's managing that impact accelerator, we are constantly connecting with them, providing them still access to the co-working space of the Close the Gap Hub. So they still have offices, have access to administrative services. So the answer to your question is yes, very actively. We keep engaging with them because we know that entrepreneurship is a journey. It's not a one-stop thing where you set up and then you go on your own. Certainly in early stage developments, it's really about trial and error. It's about motivation. It's about supporting entrepreneurs also with adapting their model when they see that the business is not picking up, they kind of don't get out of their costs. So this Impact Accelerator eventually will also have some alumni, I hope. And then those alumni would then eventually be the ones that are kind of on their own feet and might continue and outgrow Close the Gaps Hub in Mombasa and go wherever they feel they have to go, but then still contribute to the ecosystem, to the alumni working. But that's too early yet today. We only started 2.5 years ago with this program.
Oh, so I mean, you've achieved quite a lot in those 2 years.
Yeah, we invested almost 400,000 euros in seed capital in Kenya and also some in Uganda and South Africa. We're obviously a relatively small organization and we act and look at ourselves as an SME ourselves. So at our level, we are happy and proud of having reached some of the milestones we've reached. But the jury is out there. They're still full of challenges ahead of us. And if we want to remain successful and mostly impactful, we need to see the numbers grow. We need to see more startups, more successful startups, more revenue generated in the startups, and also see more traction from VCs and from early stage funders.
Wonderful, wonderful. I'm quite confident that you will see that growth. So looking closer at some of the, I guess, the products, the innovations and solutions that come out of the hubs, what are some of the innovations and solutions that you're seeing that you're quite excited about coming out of your incubator program?
One of the projects, I'm a young parent myself with a six-year-old and now a newborn, there is a startup here in Mombasa called Tech Kids Africa. It's founded by two good friends of me from Mombasa here, Paul Akwabi and Jason. And what they basically developed as a startup is a kind of a model where after school activities are organized in robotics and in gaming and coding for young kids here at the coast. So they have a couple of hundreds of kids that are enrolled in their programs. They both go on site with trainers and with robotics kits to schools where they get like a kind of an hour every now and then in the classroom to give generic coding classes to actually incentivize and inspire young kids about STEM activities, the science, technology, engineering and mathematics, so the typical STEM interests. And then the business model afterwards would be that those kids would then also enroll on site in our hub in those Tech Kids programs, typically on Saturday mornings, after school work weekdays, but also on school term breaks. And those kids would then really learn how to develop their own favorite type of app. So you would see 6 years old that are literally developing an app, how to order a hamburger online.
Brilliant.
The app will not go live in terms of a real business, but they have learned how to think as a coder. They have learned how to think as an aspiring entrepreneur and how a tech, an application basically can bridge the gap between an idea that they have and an eventual solution they would see for themselves as something they aspire to see happening in their day-to-day life already at the age of six and growing. So that's really a startup in which I've also invested lots of time and energy, and I've gotten so much returns from friendship and of passion and inspiration, and mostly seeing those youngsters in our hub every day, almost talking like grown-ups already and as if they are already in business, is really, really exciting.
No, that's really exciting. That's brilliant to hear. So you detailed some of the, I guess, unique innovations from your incubator that you're excited about, such as robotics and coding. From your perspective, what makes Close the Gap unique to other incubators in that region?
I think we touched part of the answer here already on when we talked about the circular economy hub. I think what really makes us unique is that we kind of focus all our incubation programs on circular challenges and circular opportunities. So just two quick other examples on top of the ones I mentioned, but what I would categorize in agri-tech. We have a young team that grew up in a rural small farm holding family. They built, kind of using a battery and a solar panel, a kind of an egg incubator to actually increase the produce from chicken from small farm holders. You see, that's again typically a circular product because they reuse certain type of products so they can develop those egg incubators in a cheap and affordable way. Another guy here who's quite famous already is Kusa Freezer. You know, as I mentioned, there is hundreds of kilometers of Indian Ocean here, very hot weather, and many, many people are fishing here. So by the time the fisherman or fisherwoman comes back with its produce of the day, and by the time they can sell it, quite a bit of the fish is already spoiled and is unhealthy to sell. So this guy developed a kind of a Kusa freezer, even on wheels. He has several models. And it's also based on a battery and on a solar panel. And basically, then they have a platform where mobile money is used by a couple of fishermen that would pay like a small, small amount to such a Kusa freezer that is physically on the beach. And they can then use the capacity to keep it refrigerated with the positive effects on the sales at the end of the day. So those are the typical things we do in our incubator. And I think that makes us quite unique because we have this very local, the needs from really the area around our hub in Mombasa, typically looking at challenges that you would not have typically like in Nairobi, for instance, or at least not exclusively.
Thank you for that, Olivier. So you've detailed the innovations and what makes Close the Gap unique. So I guess the uniqueness is what attracts a lot of these entrepreneurs and startups. So I was wondering if we could go into a bit more detail regarding that in terms of how do you go about finding entrepreneurs and startups that are suitable for your incubator?
The beauty there is, again, because of the public-private partnerships, the fact that we work with universities, with organizations such as SwahiliPod being like a youth center here in town in Mombasa with thousands of members, they are kind of helping us to spread the word. Very important also, I think, here even more than in other geographies, social media. African young people are so much connected on social media. So you can reach so many people via Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn and other platforms. So we use those modern types of communication to spread the word and definitely also word to mouth communication.
So with working with these young entrepreneurs and startups, I'm sure you're exposed to a lot of new trends and exciting innovations. So I was wondering if you could tell us about any current trends in Africa's, say, circular economy space that you're currently excited about.
I think the artificial intelligence and big data are definitely leapfrogging many solutions. In the clean tech industry, looking how hubs like ours could actually start with mapping, for instance, like the level of trees that were planted from a CO2 emission perspective project in a certain very rural and faraway area where I think the component of trust to the stakeholders, to the consumers that are offsetting their flights or other type of offsetting into investing in, for instance, into those green developments of planting trees. You see, for instance, that those trees can now be coded on maps using all kinds of existing geolocation information. Just one random example where you can basically monitor whether those developments of planting trees are maintained, whether those trees are still there a couple of years down the road, whether there has not been fires, have not been people destroying forests for economic growth. And those are all exciting applications that can be modeled in a very low cost and high efficient way using artificial intelligence and big data. And I truly think that that is one of the biggest excitements also for our circular economy hub. Second to that is the job creation aspect using technology. As you know, in Africa, many, many people are still living in relatively poor and underprivileged circumstances. But more and more of those people would have access to a proper internet connection, a 4G connection, a 5G connection even, and a device. That's typically what we can also provide with our circular computer upcycling project. So basically, there is so much work done across the globe today, typically in India, in China, in some lower cost tech hubs. Why wouldn't we be able to get to places like Kibera in Nairobi, in like very high dense places, but also in Mombasa, just in regular households and high density living places that people could actually work for global customers using a platform as an in-between with a quality control and with a dispatching type of platform so that people can work from where they are, actually generating a decent income. And those are definitely things that are happening already. But in a continent with over a billion people and with so many young people in urban villages, cities, I think the room for growth and expansion on that type of projects is really extraordinary growth.
Amazing, amazing. So you've beautifully detailed some trends and applications that you're excited about in artificial intelligence, big data, and also, most importantly, job creation. So if we look in terms of those trends and innovations in terms of the future of Africa, where do you see Africa in 5 years' time from a circular economy perspective?
Oh, that's a very interesting topic. From what I see in Kenya, and actually as we speak today, I got an invitation from a kind of a circular economy dialogue conference happening this week in Nairobi.
Oh, brilliant.
Both on circular textile, circular ICT, on circular building, on circular medical. In my opinion, this continent in the next 5 years will be amongst the most innovative and also the most disruptive continents when it gets to circular economy. Definitely because of the fact that there is such a booming young population here on the one hand. And secondly, also because the cost of employment is still relatively low. And if you compare it like to the US or even to Europe, and circular economy often goes together with repair, with re-engineering, and that takes lots of labor. And the reason why in some, I would say, more mature economies, big consumer economies like US and Europe, where you see that, you know, the typical frustration I think many of us have is the concept called plant obsolescence. So it's basically that producers are developing new products and already somehow in their product planning one component that they know this will break by that time in the life cycle and it will be impossible to repair it. So they will have to buy a new one.
Yes.
Those are luckily things that organizations, governments like the European Union and many other governments are now really getting out of the market and giving incentives to corporates being much more in a sustainable full life cycle planning modus to avoid this type of plant obsolescence. What I want to say related to your question is that repair shops, repair labs are booming all over the world. But in this continent, you don't see them in a formal way yet. There's definitely lots of repair shops in informal economy. But I see those type of circular economy initiatives booming in Africa, becoming more formal, becoming bigger, becoming more scalable. And definitely this continent also becoming a manufacturing continent. I think that's what the five next years are all about, is looking at Africa as a manufacturing continent instead of importing everything. I'm not saying they are importing everything. And definitely Kenya is already a very strong economy compared to some other countries. If you would look like countries like DRC or Burundi or Congo, but like Rwanda and Kenya are already, for instance, leapfrogging and pioneering with car manufacturing companies coming here, doing the assembly, the final assembly here, creating local smartphones, including the assembly process. So all of this will kind of become the future in the next 5 years. And you will see that Africans will buy more local, will buy more locally assembled products. They will do it in a way that they can also do the repair and the reuse and the circularity of the products within the framework of their own economies, of their own regulation. And I think that will be really an amazing next 5 years for Africa.
I agree 100%. I believe within Africa, we need to produce and manufacture more and rely less on imports. There are huge opportunities, as you say, in the circular economy. So the next 5 years will be interesting and one to definitely keep an eye on. So if we look closer to home, where do you see yourself and close the gap in 5 years' time?
Oh, that's a spot-on question that I can answer quite straightforward because my investor asked me the same question not so long ago.
Oh, brilliant.
So basically, we want Mombasa to be the flagship of our company in Africa because obviously Mombasa is one of the most major and important ports of the continent and definitely of East Africa. The East Africa community, Tercer, has around, I would say, 400 million East Africans, being from Uganda, Ethiopia, Kenya, Tanzania, Rwanda, Burundi, South Sudan. So can you imagine how big this region is? It's almost as many people as the US that are served via, amongst others, but mainly the port of Mombasa. So I think Close the Gap will have to also expand with a hub and with franchises in all the East African community countries. Secondly, we have a connection, being a Belgian myself, with DRC, Congo Kinshasa.
Yeah.
We are going to set up a joint venture with a very strong organization company in Kinshasa. And we are at the point of drafting the memorandum of how to do that. So that will definitely happen also in the next year. And then we also want to set up a hub in South Africa so that basically East Africa, Central Africa, and Southern Africa interconnected, that we can have movement of capital and ideas between our hubs, that our entrepreneurs can basically set up a business model, also service the market in South Africa or in Uganda, so to say, and vice versa. So the next 5 years will be about expanding to those three regions.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to keeping an eye out and listening or receiving updates from yourself regarding your successful expansion across Africa. Thank you for sharing that, Olivia.
Quote of the week.
As people, we often have quotes, mantras, proverbs, or even affirmations that keep us going when times are challenging or when times are good. Do you have one that you can share with us today?
Oh, I like to quote my moral father, who unfortunately passed away end of last year, Archbishop Desmond Tutu. And the quote that I got from him is actually, practice what you preach.
Yes.
I think if all of us would try to do that more, it's probably impossible to always be on the right side of that quote. And I'm also trying and definitely failing from time to time as well. But I think if we all would try to practice what we preach, the world would be a much better place, because I so much believe that every human being from all walks of life, originally in your deep rooted fundaments, all wants to contribute to better livelihoods, to better societies, whether it's in your very small community, in your family, in your company, in your youth association, in the school of your kids. We all are kind of on these worlds for a similar rooted energy to make our world a better place. So if we would all practice what we preach, I think we would have much nicer discussions when we talk about world challenges, when we talk about SDGs, when we talk about joblessness, when we talk about poverty. So that's the quote I want to give you. Practice what you preach.
Brilliant, brilliant. What a way to end or close the conversation we've had today. Very, very profound and meaningful quote to end on. So before we finish today, Olivia, do you have any closing remarks and final calls to action for people who might be interested in what you do or just in terms of circular economy within Africa?
As a closing remark, I would like to remind everyone about the fact that we live in a world where probably so many people, probably not the majority yet, but getting to a majority in the world, are using not one electronic device, but probably two or three. You have your work PC if you work in a business or in a corporate or in a government administration. You have your often your personal telephone or smartphone. you have a tablet at home, whether it's your kids play on it or you use it for yourself or as a music station. We can't live in a world with 6 billion people and counting that each of them have 2, 3, 4 devices if we don't make them circular, if we don't make sure we use them in such a way that we steward them to a second lease of life. So my call to action is to actually look at electronics with a circular eye and be aware of the benefits your device can have if you put it in an urban mining collection scheme. And in that perspective, my call to action is just to be a good consumer when it gets to electronics specifically, and to think about close the gap. If you are living and working in Kenya or in East Africa, in South Africa, in DRC, or in Central Europe, just go to closethegap.org and we'll try to help you to recycle and make your device circular.
Fantastic. That is an extremely important call to action and note to end on. We all have a responsibility for the good and the positive progress of the global economy, the environment that we live and work in. So yes, thank you for sharing that, Olivia. That has been an extremely enjoyable and insightful conversation. Thank you for joining us on the podcast today. You've definitely shared some wonderful nuggets, information, insight, and knowledge that you've gathered during your time in and outside of Africa. So yes, once again, thank you for joining us today.
Asante sana, as we say in Swahili here. It was my pleasure. Thank you for your interest and hope to keep in touch and looking forward to many more conversations.
Definitely. Look forward to speaking and collaborating again in the future. So thank you, Olivia.
Thank you so much, sir.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you to everyone who has listened and stayed tuned to the podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, share, or tell a friend about it. You can also rate, review us in Apple Podcasts or wherever you download your podcast. Thank you, and see you next week for the Unlocking Africa podcast.